Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
So welcome to this very special episode of the Curzon Form podcast. I'm Sam Howlett, and this week I'm joined by Kate Taylor from the BFI, as it is the beginning of the London Film Festival this week. So Kate, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So to begin with, could you just tell us a bit about your role with the BFI and what part you take in running the festival?
Sure. So I'm one of the festival programmers. Mm-hmm. There are 3 festival programmers who work on the festival year-round, alongside festival director Claire Stewart and deputy head of festivals Tricia Tuttle. And we kind of lead on researching films in different areas. So I lead on East Asian films, the films in the festival from China, Hong Kong, Japan, Korea, etc. And then we also support we have about 20 program advisors who are looking at different territories, either kind of geographically, so films from South America or Africa, or looking at the different strands we have and looking at the thrill selection, seeing that it has a kind of interesting texture. So we support them as well.
Okay, excellent. So could you then maybe talk a bit about the calendar leading up to the festival? So when do you kind of start selecting films? And is it that you actually select films, or is it films that come to you and like submit to you? How does it work?
Sure. Well, it starts in December for the next year. That's when we'll start on our tracking, on our database, kind of looking at announcements in the trade press about films that we're expecting to deliver into 2018, it'll be. And there we're really looking at what's going to be coming into Sundance, Berlin, and Rotterdam. And those are the start of our process for each year. So we'll have members of the team traveling to different festivals, and our program advisors are also scouting in their areas. And that kind of keeps going till Cannes time. And then from kind of June onwards, June is our deadline for submissions. June to the end of July, early August, is when we're really in a very intensive viewing period, and that's when a lot of the final decisions get made. In terms of what gets sent to us and what we solicit, it's a real mix, because we try and do as much research. We build on the relationships we have with filmmakers and really investigate, production in terms of laboratories. Lots of festivals now will have new funding schemes and places where you can kind of spot talent sometimes even a couple of years ahead. And so you want to kind of keep an eye on it and track all that talent. So by the time we finish selecting for the program, when we closed the database this year, we had over 2,000 films that we'd been considering in one form or another.
Wow.
Not all of them would have been finished or available or actually would have been right for the festival, but that's the kind of research that we need to be doing to be making sure that we that we don't get any surprises of films that we might have missed.
Yeah, and can I ask how many years you've been doing this for the LFF?
Sure, this is my 4th festival that's coming up.
Great, okay, awesome. So it's kind of a broad question, I guess, but what is it about a film that kind of convinces you or makes you think, yes, this is right for LFF? Because you said there are some firms that aren't right. So what's the kind of criteria, if there is one?
Absolutely. Well, maybe if I tell you about process and then tell you about criteria. Yeah. So the process with a film is after someone, if one of our viewers has seen something that they think was is going to work for the festival, it then gets second viewed. So so for example, if Maria Delgado, who sees our Spanish and Latin American selection, if she sees a great Argentinian film that she thinks is, you know, a dead cert comedy for a laugh, then it'll be viewed by Lee Singer, who's looking at the laugh strand. And then once both of their notes are in, if there's a champion for the film, even if it's just one out of the two, we'll then discuss it in the program team. And Claire, the festival director, will kind of interrogate us on a whole bunch of factors so that every film that gets in has to be kind of strongly championed. Nothing should end up in the programme that programmers are just like, well,
it's fine. Yeah,
it's fine. Yeah, exactly. So so in terms of that spark, obviously, when you're watching a film, you'll often have quite a personal response, a sense of kind of electricity, or this is a discovery, or I really want to kind of show this to people. But what that process does is it really breaks it down to make sure that we're thinking about the audience and, you know, when they've paid their money and they're sat there, what is going to be the experience for them? And certainly when we're looking at the array of films in a strand, we're trying to make sure that there aren't like three deadpan Scandinavian comedies about a baby being stolen or something. You have to really kind of vary it up, the different styles of filmmaking. We're also making sure that we're international.
Of course.
So we have to, think about geographical spread, to think about, you know, ethnicity and diversity on screen and behind the camera. We're obviously super interested in kind of strong female voices and encouraging more female talent, both on screen and behind the camera. We're looking for exciting LGBT stories. We also run the BFI Flare Festival that happens in March, so we're kind of constantly on the lookout for work that's there. And then you want to have a real mix of emerging talent and established filmmakers. There are some filmmakers that we've really built up a audience for in London, and there's some that you just want to make sure that you're there at the beginning of their journey to kind of keep to keep audiences aware of what's coming through.
Excellent. Okay. So October 4th then is the launch.
Absolutely.
Opening night we have Andy Serkis's Breathe.
Yeah.
So what does the opening film have to do for the festival, and what statement should it make?
Well, I think it varies a lot, opening films for different festivals and the kind of the function of them. With Breathe, we were really charmed by a story that's coming from a first-time director, although obviously a director who many people know for his acting skills. But it was a story that was made with a lot of care, and it's the story of the producer's parents. So you know that there's a lot of kind of love that's gone into it, but it's also a really inspirational story about true events. And I think something that's certainly not essential for the opening night, but having a story to tell about a British first-time feature, something that we think audiences will really enjoy, that we think is an incredibly audience-friendly film, and also that has a range of kind of talking points within it. Over the past couple of years, we've had films that have been very directly related to talking points. With Breathe, we were just totally charmed by it and felt it was a great, strong British story to tell.
I think that's true with last year's as well. United Kingdom and the year before, was it Suffragette the year
Absolutely,
before that? Yeah, they're all three kind of British made, like you said, with these interesting talking points that are very relevant at the moment. And then the same question, I suppose, with the closing film. So this year it is Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri?
Correct.
Okay.
Yes. I mean, this is a film that just just totally excited us when we saw it. It's a film with a lot of humour. It absolutely has a lot of political resonance. It's, I mean, Martin McDonagh never pulls his punches.
No, of course.
And in this film, it's done with a huge amount of, you know, dark wit. And I suppose you want to end the film with a festival that is going to have an impact so that people are going out, whether they're going out to a party or they're going out and you know, leaving the festival with a bang.
Okay. What was it last year? Can you remind me?
Free Fire.
Oh, of course. Okay. Yeah. It, with a literal bang.
Literally, yes. Many bangs, yes.
Okay. So between those two films then, there's obviously an infinite number of films playing. Could you talk about some of your personal highlights then? What are you most looking forward to playing in front of an audience in London?
One highlight that I think is quite exciting is a film called Custody by Xavier Legrand. And that's a French film that won a couple of awards in Venice. It's a debut feature. And it's a really kind of edge-of-your-seat experience in terms of... it's about a mother and father who are arguing about custody of their children. And very early on, we get a sense of that the father holds a certain amount of power over the wife and children. And it leads up to an incredible, very tense climax. And I think it's a really striking debut. So it's a late announcement. So it, and that's showing at Curzon Soho. And I think that's pretty special. Island is a film we're screening the world premiere of. It's by Stephen Eastwood, who's a London-based artist. And that is a film that he's been making over the past 5 years in the Isle of Wight. And it's he's built up these relationships with people who are at the end of their life and has created this incredibly kind of moving... but not wallowing portrait of death, really. And that's a pretty exciting film that we're showing at Curzon Soho. And yes, and he will be there for Q&As. And then we have Darling, which is a Danish film about a ballerina. It's a drama for fans of Black Swan, I guess. And it's features some incredible choreography alongside a really provocative, emotionally intelligent story about a woman whose return home is not what she expected.
Okay.
From the East Asian selection, which is kind of an area that I lead on, it's really exciting this year because we have a strong showing from Chinese film, and often it's quite difficult to find independent Chinese cinema. It's not always easy to make. And there's a few Chinese and films from Hong Kong that are super exciting. One is Wrath of Silence, and that is a second feature from Jin Yu Kun, who made Coffin in the Mountains. And it's a thriller that's about a mute guy who travels back to his a village because his son has gone missing. And then he's a real brawler. Mm-hmm. He can't help but get himself into trouble with these kind of local mining goons. And then he meets their kind of meat-obsessed kingpin boss, who's an awesome baddie who many people will recognize as the lead from Touch of Sin, the Zhao Shanker film. And, you know, maybe this boss has something to do with his son's disappearance. So it's a thriller, but it mixes a kind of art house composure. It has kind of levels of violence and a certain kind of stylish mise-en-scene that's, you know, reminiscent of a lot of Korean films recently.
Right.
And, yeah.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered.
Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
As a totally emotionally, a real gut punch for an ending.
So for fans of The Handmaiden, perhaps. Not
Absolutely.
To group these films together, but, you know, you kind of like, sort of a genre film with a sort of art house inflection.
Absolutely. I think fans of Park Chan-wook, fans of Zsa Zhang-ke, although they're entirely different in style, I think, I mean, for fans of Zsa Zhang-ke as well, it's got a kind of political resonance to it and a kind of rage about a certain level of kind of corruption that's pretty exciting. And then in competition, there's a film called Angels Wear White, which also played in Venice competition. It's by a female director, a second feature. We showed her first feature, Trap Street, in our first feature competition a few years ago, Vivian Chu. And she's made a drama about a child and a young woman. And the film is set in the aftermath of a sexual assault. And it's kind of about how they deal with that. But it's really very feminist in terms of it's a very compassionate film that deals with people after an event has happened and the way that life goes on. And it's very nuanced and kind of emotionally sophisticated, but it also looks at the way that the sexualization of women and young girls, the impact that has on them and their bodies, but at a structural level. So not just looking at a male gaze, but looking at whole systems and how they how they impact on young women. It's really exciting.
Yeah.
Film.
Okay. And is that playing in a? Is that a Strand or is that in a?
That's playing in official competition.
Official competition. Okay. So how big is the competition for the festival? Because I know that, like, it's maybe not as integral to the festival as say the Palme d'Or is to Cannes. You know, with Cannes it feels like everything leads up to that award, whereas London it feels like it's more just a part of it rather than the main thing. Would you say?
Well, it's very different.
Yeah.
So I would say we have 4 competitive sections. So there's official competition, documentary competition, where they're competing for the Grierson Award, Sutherland, which is for first feature, and then for the past 3 years we've been running short film competition as well. And I suppose it's a way, alongside the galas, which are often films that are playing directly into the awards season and are very high-profile films, it's a way of us elevating a lot of what we consider to be the boldest, most exciting filmmaking internationally and giving it a kind of higher platform. So it's also a very strong way to encourage audiences to... to take risks. It's a mix of established and some first-time features this year as well.
You mentioned awards season there, and London is perhaps the last big festival before awards season really kicks into gear, sort of at the end of the year. How big of a role does awards season have in sort of shaping the festival?
Well, I suppose it's kind of the other way around, in a sense, because obviously when you see certain films, you'll come out of it and you'll think, like, for example, when we saw La La Land last year, we walked out and we said, oh, that's going to win all the awards. And sometimes you'll have a sense of that straight away. Sometimes there'll be films like Moonlight, which we had the international premiere of. When we saw that, it hadn't really been seen.
Yeah.
It certainly hadn't been shown anywhere. And whilst we felt very strongly about it and we put it in our official competition, you didn't know for sure.
No.
So there are a lot of films that we want to try and encourage on that journey. So, I mean, the festival has always been a time of year where we can select a lot of the best films from the beginning of the year. So we're showing things that have won awards in Berlin and Cannes, etc. But we're increasingly becoming a place to launch films. So this year, more than ever, we have more kind of European premieres and more world premieres. And obviously that means that you don't have, you don't know how they're going to land with audiences always in advance. So you're really hopeful to kind of push them in that way. So we work a little bit with AMPAS.
Right.
And London actually has the largest number of AMPAS voters outside
right.
of Los Angeles and New York. And obviously we also work with BAFTA. And so we try and make sure that when talent is in town and when those screenings are happening, that those films can start to get on the radar of voters. And especially we have a really good hit rate with the foreign language Oscar as well.
Right, okay.
So,
excellent.
Yeah.
So something that London, this categorization system,
mm-hmm.
Not quite a system, but so like love, debate, laughter, thrill, journey. Could you talk about the reasoning behind having those different categorizations? Because it's not quite genre-based, is it? Or
no.
Anything like that?
No, it's interesting. Basically, I think it's pretty innovative.
Yeah.
And it's something that that is quite unique. The Claire Stewart, when she was mm-hmm. festival director of a Sydney Film Festival before
right.
coming to London, did a lot of research on audiences and why someone would come and see a film. And the top answers were, what's it about? And what kind of film is it? What kind of experience will
right.
I get? The genre and so forth. And then kind of a lot further down were who was the director and what will the critics say? And as a programmer, those tend to often be the things that are at the top of your mind.
Yeah.
You're in a certain mindset of looking at, auteurism or looking or being very familiar with national cinemas. But when someone receives the festival catalogue, and there's 242 films in there,
mm-hmm.
if they already know all of that stuff, then they're already going to be confident in making their selection.
Yeah.
But what we really want to do is to encourage new people to the festival and to encourage first-timers and for people to take risks. So the idea with the kind of the pathways, the thematic strands, is to give people a sense of what kind of pleasure they're going to get from the film before they get there. So the idea being, okay, it's a Friday night, I fancy a thrill, maybe I'll go and see the Sri Lankan film with a director or talent that I don't know about just because I know that that's something I'm going to get from it. And it's been really successful in terms of, you know, last year we had audience growth of 18%, in the previous years we'd already gone up by like 24%. So and we're seeing a lot of that growth in terms of new people coming to the festival and people trying things out for the first time.
Okay. So let's talk a bit about London's place in the kind of broader scope of the festival circuit.
Mm-hmm.
So where do you think it sort of stands compared to things like Cannes and Venice and Toronto? Like, what's London's, you know, its unique selling point, its identity, per se?
Well, I think London, the city, is our
okay.
unique selling point in terms of it's very much a public festival.
Yes.
Whilst we have a, you know, healthy film industry here and certainly large press contingent as well, it's very much in our thinking all the time about reflecting the diversity of London and trying to find something so that anyone who wants to come is going to find a film that's going to excite them. So, yeah, I suppose that's our... and we have, you know, incredibly engaged audiences. We have quite lively Q&As, quite informed audience. And I guess it relates to a wider film culture kind of year-round as to what the BFI and what other distributors and cinemas are doing. I think it's quite an exciting time to be in London
yeah.
right now.
Okay, excellent. I've been going there for the past, I think, 5 years
mm-hmm.
to the LFF. And even when, you know, even though I have a sort of this press pass, I still go to the public screenings
because mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I think that London Film Festival really, it's really there for the public in a way.
Mm.
Can you talk about that, this sort of aspect of the festival that is for the people, to put it in a strange term?
I think you've put it quite well. Absolutely. I mean, we try as much as we can to bring in filmmakers
yeah.
and so to get them to engage with London audiences. Last year, we had over 700 filmmakers, who were attached in various roles to the films. And the feedback that we get from them is fantastic in terms of the level of engagement from the questions, but also the feedback that they get after the screenings, as well as, you know, the technical presentation and the just amazing venues that we use. So, so it's absolutely a festival that celebrates how good London filmgoers are.
Yeah, I mean, and I know friends that, like, aren't that into film, but they still go because there's just this sort of excitement about, you know, these are films that aren't out yet, you know. And I think it does draw in massive crowds, as you say.
Well, absolutely. Also, I mean, I'm not sure what the stats are this year, but generally it's about 60% of the films that we program won't have distributors when we right. start the festival. So for a lot of the films, it's your only chance to see them.
Yeah.
As well as, you know, lots of films that we're kind of previewing to people, so you get that sense of buzz first. But there's also something very unique about the atmosphere. One of the films I'm very excited about this year is A Fantastic Woman,
yes,
which is going to be the Flair Gala, and it's a Sebastian Lelio film. It's an incredible depiction of a trans woman who's just trying to get a bit of respect, and I was thinking about it this morning and how excited I would be to be in that audience and to feel that atmosphere. And Daniela Vega, the star of the film, is going to be there. And I just feel it's one that's going to lift off the roof and be a real experience. And that's the type of thing that a festival can engender sometimes, which is exciting.
And finally then, what would you like to tell us about the festival that we haven't already said so far?
One thing is that there's almost always tickets. Mm-hmm. So a lot of things which seem unlikely to have tickets available, often if you turn up, then there are returns. And you know, there's something about queuing as well for returns and rush tickets, which can be quite an exciting part of the festival process. And obviously us British are like...
We love a queue.
We love a queue. But talking to someone next to you, and I would say that as well, festivals are a time when you can talk to the person next to you, because it's likely that if they're there, they care about film and you care about film. And that experience of meeting people who kind of share your passion and having a space to discuss things, I think is absolutely, you know, festivals should be like little mini utopias for people who care about film. And yeah, having that ability to have that conversation is what it's all about. So I suppose that's another thing, is finding finding spaces and ways to encourage people to talk, whether, not just in the Q&A in public, but hopefully in the bar afterwards as well.
Excellent, great. So the festival dates are the 4th of October to the 15th of October?
Absolutely,
great. Yes. Yeah, I remember 2 years ago I turned up on the day to see the gala premiere of High Rise.
Oh, yeah.
And it was, I thought it was sold out, but I walked past the, you know, they have those, like, the sort of set-up festival booth things.
Absolutely, yeah.
On a whim, got 5 tickets in the back row. So
fantastic.
You can, there are always tickets available, as you say.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and it's also quite thrilling to walk down a red carpet, even though you have nothing to do with the film.
Yeah, I think red carpets, they have their place, and it'll be a lot of fun.
Excellent. So, Kate Taylor, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.